Please, 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 please be aware of the buyer's agent traps. There are a lot of buyer's agents out there at the moment that can talk the talk, look good, but what is really under the hood? Rhyme not intended. Obviously, my name's Jared Krauss. Hello, I'm the co-host of the Property Powers Australia podcast. And in this episode, Sam Powell, my co-host, and I chat to Steve Polizzi, who is the founder of the buyer's agency firm Polizzi Property, where they've bought over 1,000 properties for clients. And he's also the author of the book Commercial Property Explained Simply. And in this episode, Steve, Sam, and myself, they're all bigwigs of, you know, and very highly successful people in property. We just strip it all back, get really transparent, and we talk about buyer's agents. We talk about, you know, buyer's agents with amazing marketing budgets. Are they the best buyer's agents to choose from? And if not, why? We talk about what traps to be aware of with buyer's agents who are maybe heavily selling you something that may not align with your goals because they have some sort of reward that they can adhere or get for themselves selfishly. We also talk about some key questions that you should be asking buyer's agents when you're doing your due diligence on them before even working with them. We talk about some metrics that you should be looking at from buyer's agents that may look and sound great, but how you should take some of those metrics with a grain of salt based against what your investment strategy is, your philosophies, and what you should be doing for your own personal goals. We also talk about and share some of our philosophies, Steve's philosophies, Sam's philosophies, my philosophies on not just investing but life, and how to find someone that suits your investment type, your strategy, and your portfolio goals. Now, there's so many great things that we mentioned in this podcast. If you're going to buy a property and you're going to use a buyer's agent, you absolutely need to listen to this. So go away and enjoy. Welcome to Property Pals, the podcast where we share everything around how to build a property portfolio, from researching areas, financing, structuring, buying, selling, and reinvesting to live a life of financial independence. As a disclaimer, any information shared by myself, Jared, Sam, and the Property Pals team is strictly general and should not be taken as constituting professional advice. You should consider seeking independent legal, financial, and taxation advice from a qualified professional. Steve, welcome back to the pod. What are you doing wearing a shirt? We need the best investor, mate.
Summer's actually ending. It's actually quite cold today on the northern beaches. And like I mentioned last time, I'm in Japan and it's about 5 degrees. So yeah, definitely not the bare-chested investor for a couple of weeks.
You're starting to get conditioned.
That's right. Getting my Wim Hof on and my ice bath. isn't the rule of social media you're not allowed to have an ice bath unless you post it now?
Pretty much. No saunas, no ice baths unless it's, you know, live stream to Facebook and YouTube.
Yeah. I go to the gym and people are like recording themselves in the steam rooms and the saunas and stuff. It's like they record everything they do these days. It's a bit weird.
Are these people called Sam?
No, that's just me in the mirror, mate, trying to flex me one ab.
You do get that. You walk past the mirror afterwards, you're like, oh, I'm looking really good. And then you get home and you're like, my mirrors are nowhere near as good as at the gym.
So all the lighting mirrors, yeah, fancy mirrors. Steve, this is going to be a good chat around how to choose a good buyer's agent, both on the resi side and the commercial side. I don't even have talking points because I've got so many questions in my head, and I know Sam does as well. Sam being the principal, I guess, educator on as a valuer for a bunch of different firms in Australia. I guess, Sam, I'll just hand the mic to you for a couple of questions because I'm even happy to sit in as a fly on the wall here.
Oh, mate, it's a masterclass of how to choose the best buyer's agent in Australia. I left valuation, right, and I came into the buyer's agent space because I had that, I guess I saw people doing really, small mistakes but costing them a lot of money. And I was like, well, this is something I can help people with. Mm-hmm. And Steve, by the sound of it, you've had something, similar in your journey where you want to help people, you want to do the right thing because you know that by doing the right thing by people, it'll come back, whatever the future may hold. But biggest thing that I did find coming into the industry is that there's a lot of people that either lack the experience but have great marketing, and people do get caught up in that. And there's been a number of instances where I've looked at people's portfolios, I've seen what they've bought, and it doesn't make sense to me, yet they've paid someone to go and, I guess, assist them in buying something that is a bit of a lemon. And when you break it down, there's a lot of smoke and mirrors in this industry. So someone like yourself, you're so transparent with your not only your books, but your podcasts and everything. I thought it'd be great to sort of pick your brain as well and riff on this topic.
No, I love this. This is like, out of the hundreds of podcasts I've done, I've never actually had to talk about this topic. So I'm actually genuinely excited because I think I'm going to shock you a little bit.
Oh, yeah. Well, let's jump in, mate. It might be a bit controversial, but I mean, in the sense of that is, there's not enough about this going on in the industry. So yeah, the biggest things that one of the biggest things that shocked me the most was, buying new product, and builders would come and pay me, offer to pay me $30,000 to $40,000 in commission. And then there's buyer's agents out there that are not only taking the $15,000 or $20,000 as a fee to assist you, but they're also taking the $30,000 and $40,000 on top. And for me, it's a massive conflict of interest because 9 times out of 10, the properties that they're actually buying are on the outskirts because they're their new product. And yeah, sure, you get great depreciation benefits. And this is just topic one for this whole potty. But like, it doesn't make any sense to me. But obviously, the shiny marketing brochures and all the money they can put into marketing to convince you to go down that path is in their best interest and not you as a client. So having topics like this, sort of a bit of a passion of mine. But what have you seen in your journey in this buyer's agent space?
Yeah, so there's 2 points I want to kind of touch on there that you mentioned, Sam. So firstly, people need to know the people that are double dipping. So if you're using a buyer's agent who's charging you and they're getting paid by someone else, that's actually illegal. Like, that's not according to their license. It happens very, very regularly. And there's actually ways around it as well. They can charge the client. And then part of selling like an off the plan, say they sell 10 of them, they get their 11th one with a 50% discount. So even though there's no transfer of money, they're still actually getting paid for it. So first thing is obviously check their incentive of why, who's paying them, how they're getting paid and things like that. And then the second point is if you're using a buyer's agent, some of them don't charge. Some are buyer's agents who say, oh no, I get paid by the developer because we're doing wholesale stock or whatever their sales routine is. I don't call them buyer's agents. If you're not paying them, they're not your agent. They're an agent for someone else, a real estate agent, a developer. So don't call them a buyer's agent. You are just going to a glorified selling agent who's kind of masking themselves not as a selling agent. They're a buyer's agent, but they're not buyer's agents, all right?
Yeah. Yes, deal. What about those real estate agents that call themselves buyer's agents, the buyer division? I like those ones where you're like, well, you're kind of getting paid by the seller, so that doesn't make much sense, but yeah.
I think the thing to take away from that point is work out who's paying them. Whoever's paying them is who their incentive is. And then even like, are they limited to a local area based on who's paying them as well? Because then they're not going to give a kind of a holistic view of what they should be buying you.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Absolutely. And then, I mean, there's experience too, mate. Like, yeah, it gets that sort of level. Like, I've gone through my journey and realized, like, working with other companies and what I'm doing now, it's just like you're constantly learning. So the biggest, issue that I've sort of come to see is that some of the people with the biggest marketing budgets are the ones that you shouldn't trust in that sense. Like, you shouldn't trust anyone, right? Like, what are your thoughts around that?
Yeah.
The main question I always ask is what you said, it's experience. So you want to find out what their experience, but not just experience, what their knowledge is as well. So experience and knowledge. And this is sort of shooting myself in the foot. Like, I'll always say go with someone experience. Like, I've done 1,500 acquisitions, I've got runs on the board, but there's buyer's agents that have done more than that I think I'm better than. So amount of deals doesn't necessarily mean experience. It's kind of got to match up with competence. And I'll give kudos to some like buyer's agents that have just started out are 20 times better than someone who's established. Because I'm going to admit something here. Like, I probably found and grafted a little bit harder when I first started out for deals because I really wanted to impress the first like 10, 20 clients. So that's now right. Like, if it's on a 800K deal, I'd really graft to get that extra $5,000 for them. But now I sort of realize in my experience, getting the deal done right is actually more important than getting an extra $2,000 or $3,000 off for the buyer, because getting a secure investment when it's worth 1.6 in 10 years' time losing a deal based on $2,000 or $3,000 and going another 2 or 3 months down the rabbit hole, you might actually lose out. So there are some kind of startup buyer's agents who are really, really, really good. The hardest thing you're going to be as a buyer is how do you actually trust them? Most of the time, you do it through their experience of their own portfolio. So that's how they kind of market themselves. They're like, look at me, I'm 28 years old with 10 properties under my portfolio, therefore trust me, which is fine. You can actually go with them and they can have a really good outcome, but you need to know what questions to kind of ask to actually find out their knowledge actually backs up their personal portfolio as well. Because I can tell you, I know so many of those buyer's agents have big portfolios. They don't tell you that they got $1 million like inheritance or something like that. So it looks great having a 3 or 4 mil portfolio, but it's actually not that hard if you've got a spare 1 or 2 mil up in your back pocket. So trying to get those questions out. And this is probably a controversial statement. Don't trust any buyer's agents with your investment anyway. No one cares as much about your wealth as you do.
Absolutely.
You've got to keep in mind that my last little thing is they've got to keep in mind that, you know, they get paid on you buying a property. So there's definitely like a bit of a pressure cooker moment where, you know, it's not viable for the business to keep on presenting you multiple properties. But if they're presenting you so many, it's because they're not doing enough on the education to give you that confidence that yes. But yeah, Steve, you hit the nail on the head. It's like no one cares more about your money than you. And like even to a point where you shouldn't trust anybody. You should use them as advisors, not just go and do it for me, because then you're outsourcing the responsibility as well. Jared knows that as well.
Exactly, Sam. That's the key word is responsibility. And I explain this to people in business when they're like, I want you to help me grow my business, or I'm going to hire somebody to do this work. Great. They can do the work, but you can pay them and outsource them to do the tasks and the work, but you should never outsource responsibility. You should always have it yourself, and you are the one that's accountable at the end of the day, because sometimes these buyer's agents, you know, they're not accountable. You buy something and then in 2 years' time, you're like, oh, well, you know, this is a deal done, you know, off the books, don't need to worry about it. We bought you the property. We did what we said we would in the contract, and maybe it didn't perform as well as they might have hoped or you might have hoped based on your level of expectation or their level of expectation. So I'm keen to dig into some of those questions, Steve, on what to be asking buyer's agents to sort of vet them personally.
Yeah, the hardest thing, especially when you're looking at a buyer's agent, is you're buying based on a prediction. That's what property is. Like, I don't care. Like, and some buyer's agents use this as an actual marketing tool. They say, we only buy inner ring Sydney because it's had the most growth. Why would you want to buy anywhere but inner ring Sydney? Look at it, it's had the most growth. That has nothing to do whether it's going to grow in the next 10 years. I can show you lots of stats to show that inner ring Sydney has not performed the best in the last 10 years. But unless you can, like you said, you're responsible and understand that knowledge, you can always misconstrue data to kind of present whatever you want. Like you can choose a time frame. It's like, correct. If I look at, I'm just going to use Sydney because I'm going on a rant with Sydney. If I go back 3 years, the dairies that have performed the best in the last 3 years are completely different to the ones performed the best from 3 to 7 years. And then if you amalgamate that, the ones over 10 years, they've performed completely different. So I can actually pick and choose my data to support whatever I actually want to say. And that's probably been the hardest one there. And you touched on this, Sam. Every buyer's agent has a different sales tactic. So like, now they've got a big marketing spend, the glossy brochures, they show previous client deals, they boast about themselves, and that's how they kind of build trust. Someone like me, I do it through education, and I just pump out free education, and that's how I build trust. And I've given away 15,000 books now, so obviously that's my main lead source. But the other point I probably want to touch on before we go into the questions is assess why the buyer's agent actually got into the industry. Like, you're going to find most of them did it for the actual money, because there's trainees for buyers agents saying, oh, get into it, have a 200K salary and work part-time and do this. And they kind of push it into it. And it is lucrative. If you actually start doing a few deals a month at, say, 15 grand a pop, it is quite profitable to do it. But obviously bringing in the clients is the hard part. Someone like me, I'm actually a little bit different. I was just going through a midlife crisis. I was going through a divorce, cracked it at the corporate world, and was like, oh, I'm just going to join this little buyer's agency and kind of do it for 12, 24 months. I went into it not expecting a huge salary. I was hoping I'd get my engineering salary. So I was like, oh, if I can earn 150K with this, it's going to be cool. But I got a job paying 50K. But I'm also different. I actually don't like some buyer's agents that just go out with zero property experience. Like they'll go, oh, I've got 5 properties now, I'll be a buyer's agent. Can you imagine if you're like an engineer and you did that? You're just like, oh yeah, yeah. I built a little playground in my backyard. I'll go design a bridge for the council. Like, so for me, I'm a bit different. I learned my craft and kind of did it for 5 or 6 years under an agency to learn it. Same as you, Sam, you were a valuer. So you came from that experience. I just find it baffling that you're going to go give someone quite a lot of money and gamble your financial future when they don't have runs on the board.
Yeah, well, that's a big thing, like trust too. And like the digital world, right, we're obviously online a lot now. People do find trust in seeing the whites of other people's eyes. And it's same as sales agents, it's the same as buyers agents, is that, you know, there's so many different things that you learn along the way. But, I mean, that small fee, the fee that you pay, not small fee, it's a decent chunk of money, like 10 to 20 grand, even more so the higher you go. Is like you want to get that value for your money, but you don't have anything to compare it against. And that's kind of like a bit of a passion of Jared and I's. It's like, well, you got to be talking to the right people and then asking the right questions as well. So it's just like, well, let's get, you know, Steve Polisi on the call and see what questions he thinks are good ones to ask, because I got a few myself.
The hardest thing, Sam, is there actually is no right answer, because every single person should have a different strategy based on like what they're trying to achieve, what time frame, what finances they got to work with, what risk profile they have. So like all the thousand other buyers agents, one of the buyers agents might be the best strategy for you, and you don't actually know that. So that's probably leads me to the first question, is like, why are they buying that kind of price range property for you? So I always bring it back to you. So, okay, why is this property right for me? Because there's a thousand types of properties. Like obviously there's residential, you got units, and you got like townhouses, then you got houses, then you've got regional areas, then you've got development sites. Then if you're shifting to commercial, you've got industrial, retail, special, office. Like there's a full broad range of types of properties. So first question I always kind of look at when you are choosing a buyer's agent is, okay, with my goals, what one should I be using? And then get them to obviously show why that property would achieve your goals. Don't get them to tell you what your goals are. You decide that, and then you work with them to get to your goals.
Yeah, working with the end in mind is probably
I'm loving this part. I can feel myself getting revved up and rambling. Yeah, I'm trying to pull myself to calm myself down a little bit.
I think the only way to really know your goals as well is to have a bit of education first and sort of work out like what, not just what your goals are, but work out a few different strategies yourself by talking to a bunch of different people. And for me, when I'm choosing to invest in something, for a property, whether it's going to be maybe a renovation or, you know, just a small quote, or to invest in a mentor, I'm going to go away and look at a bunch of different things, and I'm going to stack them against each other and see, you know, what works well for me in terms of not only pricing, but what feels right for what I'm trying to achieve in terms of quality, the help that I'm going to get, and, you know, sort of set up a bit of a criteria of what you want out of your buyer's agent in terms of the goal and also the deliverability, and then speak to a couple and work out who's the best for you. That's how I would go about sort of selecting, you know, once I've found, you know, the two or three that I think might be right for me. But to get to that stage, what are some of the things you could do, Steve, to get to that stage where you found a few?
Well, there's probably take a step back, Jared. The one I'd probably mention as well is, why are you using a buyer's agent? So that's a question you need to ask first. And there's actually different reasons. Like some people do it because they don't have the knowledge. So they know they're going to stuff up. There's too much money, risk at stake. We're going to use someone else who's got some kind of runs on the board. I get a lot of white collar professionals, especially in the commercial world, that are just time poor. Like they're working 12 hour days already. Funnily enough, I've actually got some investors that I actually work with that they're just as knowledgeable as me. Like they've got big portfolios. They know what they're doing. They're using me just as a time source because they know it takes 200, 300 hours to find a commercial. So they're doing it from a time saving measure. You get some other people that basically just want to find more opportunities. So they're going to gravitate towards the ones we go, oh, we get more off market and we explore more areas. We've got more people doing it for you. So there's that benefit as well. So try to assess what you're doing. Most first-time investors, it's because of lack of knowledge. Like they want to make sure they don't make a mistake. Like going to buy a residential property in an okay suburb, as long as you don't do something silly, like buying a flood zone or a termite-ridden house or something like that, you'll probably be okay. Like you can kind of monitor realestate.com recent sales and get a bit of an idea what's going on. But if it's an investment outside your backyard, you don't know what you're doing, then it's going to be the knowledge base.
Yeah, a lot of my first journey, it was like location research was this big thing, and understanding, you know, the opportunity cost was massive for me. So, yeah, you're right. Everyone's got a different reason to go it. And to be fair, like, yeah, I've worked with clients that they have the time to do it themselves. They kind of just lack the confidence to pull that trigger because there's so many options. And that's what we're talking about in another pod, is that analysis paralysis is a big one that I see too.
Yeah.
And that's kind of an education piece. But, I mean, there's obviously a lot more to it in negotiation skill sets and things like that. I see a lot of value in.
Yeah. That's a good point. So actually, when I'm on a sales call and someone says, oh yeah, I've been looking for 12 months, but I haven't been able to pull a trigger, I actually, like, no offense, I'm actually a good salesman. I've done this or not. I know kind of what I need to do to get a deal done. I actually, as soon as they say that, I go, cool, you're using a buyer's agent because you need to kick up the bum factor. Like, you actually need someone, even like if they could find the deal, just someone to be like, this is a good deal, please buy it. I also get a lot of time wasters that do the same thing. They call me up and they're like, oh, Steve, is Eagleby in Southeast Queensland a good suburb? And you're like, you want me to say yes. And then if I say no, they're like, why is it not a good suburb? And they want just someone to agree with them. So you get both aspects of that.
Yes. Yeah. So you got to know what your time's worth. But I mean, there's some people like that. It's just one of those things, is you try to help people wherever you can. But at the same time, it's like, well, you've got clients that are paying you for all that knowledge as well. So,
There's also some people that are just a little bit misguided. Like, I quite often get people that say, oh, I want to be a developer. And I'm like, do you actually want to be a developer, or do you just want to tell people you're a developer and make big profits? And they're like, yeah, that. Because I'm like, developing is a hard game. Like, I've done a development. Like, it is a lot of hours. They kind of just want to be like, I want to make lots of money really quickly. They don't actually want to be a developer. And they don't actually realize the risks involved and things like that. So quite often I'll actually convince people out of stuff like that, especially if they're starting the portfolio, because you don't want to shoot yourself in the foot by trying to reach for the stars at the start. Build a base portfolio first, then get into something slightly higher risk.
Yeah, I like that. That's that education piece. But I mean, like, even that goes down to what you said before, is go into your bigger picture. Like, if you want to be a developer, find a buyer's agent and ask those questions around their experience in development, because that's a whole niche product, like doing feasibilities. And you're not going to be paying 15 to 20, 25 grand for that. You're going to pay a lot more because the risk is more and the sort of reward is more. So it's always that trade-off that I find. But yeah, always asking the question around, like, well, what do they specialize in? And even seeing past deals that they've done and why they're purchasing down that can help paint that picture better for you.
Yeah, there's even sharks in that industry as well. The ones that just do developments, that's sometimes you start going into that territory that we mentioned at the start of the podcast about under the table payments and things like that. And again, previous experience doesn't mean they're going to do well in this market as well. Like, just because they did, say, I don't know, a duplex development in Newcastle 4 years ago, all those clients are going to say, this worked perfectly. This is a great company. But the market did so much of the heavy lifting. Now they might be buying, and again, I'm making up areas, so please don't go out and buy in these areas. Toowoomba, let's buy Toowoomba. That doesn't mean they're going to get the same results as well. And this is what Jared said. You need to get the responsibility of why you're actually buying there and prove it effectively.
But what about the Ferrari in the background of the video? Does that give you more confidence?
No money down. I'll put my money in the deal with you and you'll get incredibly wealthy, juiced up to the gills. Yep. Yeah, cool. Yep.
There's so much marketing spend in this industry. And that's obviously an indication because it's quite profitable, as you say. But it's just, yeah, a lot of misconceptions. But how are you supposed to know? And the answer is ask the right questions. So here we are. Listen on in.
One thing that I like to look at is, like, somebody, when I'm choosing to work with somebody, is not like, yeah, do they have the experience? Can I see past deals that they've done and have they been good? Were they recent deals? But not just like, oh, that person made a lot of money, but is that the type of investment that I'm looking for my investment now that when I'm using a buyer's agent as well? Like, is it like, if I'm looking for a particular type of residential property at this price range, have they done much of that and what were the results and is it similar? But then also speaking to the person as well, if they are the person that has the Ferrari, the suit, their hair's perfect and everything's perfect, but they don't show some vulnerabilities and some insecurities, there's nothing for me to attach or grab onto that they're a real person and they're trustworthy enough to, you know, share who they actually are as a person versus just the polished version as well. And I look at that through marketing, sales calls, and all that sort of stuff.
I actually sort of disagree with you there, but I think that's because you're a similar personality to me. Like, we're both, you're a hippie that's surfing in Indonesia kind of thing. I drive around in camper vans, so I'm never going to gravitate towards that personality. There are some slick suit wearing people that make lots of money for their clients, and they generally attract the slick suit wearing guy. There's that guy recently just made the billionaire list in Australia. The guy does the online marketing stuff and put his Ferrari up in the tower in Sydney and things like that. There are people that can still, they can enjoy that and they can be part of that world. I agree. I'm going to say most of them are sharks and they're kind of, it's a persona.
I'm not going to lie that person though as well, right? Like, I'm not going to, my goal is not to be a billionaire. Like, I don't want to be a billionaire because I don't want to have to work that much, right? So why would I hire somebody? And I've done this before. I've hired a mentor that helped me make a ton of money in my business in my first year, and I built the wrong business, and it was the worst thing for me. But I made money and a lot of it.
Yeah. And I'm sure I've lost clients because of how I dress. I wear casual t-shirts, shorts. I'm a bit rough around the edges. I'm not getting the overseas person with 50 mil investing in me. They're not going to trust me. I don't wear the watches and I don't have the slick back hair and all that stuff. So, which is fine. There's people that deal in those big, big ones that make lots of money as well and have way different knowledge than me. Like, I have no idea how to like value a Westfields, for instance, but there's people that will go out there and actually be able to buy a Westfields and negotiate it. So I think you're naturally going to gravitate towards someone that you can get a bit of a relationship with and at least not aspire to. You just don't feel like they're going to pull the wool over your eyes. You feel like they're somewhat accountable.
I definitely feel like there's a certain level in the business. Obviously, your business has grown and you've kept your level of quality really, really, really well from what I can understand and see. You're right. There's like those up and comers that, you know, are really trying to prove themselves. Like, kind of like they're difficult to find. Don't get me wrong, I went through that part of my journey too, where it actually sometimes it cost the client the opportunity cost because we were sitting around and I was trying to find the absolute perfect property, which, you know, I've obviously come to realize, you know, it doesn't always exist. It doesn't exist. It's the perfect portfolio that you build. But I definitely sort of find it's nice to have someone who just really, I guess you vibe with, and you can see they care about you.
It's, I think, just being true to yourself. And this is, I sort of learned this lesson the hard way as well. When I first joined a buyer's agency, I shaved the beard, I wore the suit, I went to meetings, and I felt like a phony. And I think people got that. I was actually trying too hard to sell. Now that I'm more casual and I just kind of tell it how it is, I actually have a way better strike rate. One of the big supermarket chains, I actually have bought properties for him as he's a director of a big supermarket chain, big high up. I turned up, he was in the proper suit, expensive car, watches and stuff. And I turned up in a t-shirt and jeans. And he's like, oh, thanks for dressing up. And I'm like, would you trust me more if I dressed up? And he's like, probably not. And he signed up on the spot because of that. Like, just because I didn't care. I was just like, this is me. I'm the traveling rough around the edges hippie, and I've embraced that. And since then, I actually get feedback from clients saying that. They're like, you seem to be who you are on social media and in real life.
Yeah, and that's so important. That's a really good metric to look for, right? Is who you are on social media versus who you are in real life and who you are when you're working as well.
Yeah. So like even my personal Facebook, like most of my clients and followers add that, and they just say it's me talking absolute nonsense and surfing and gym and playing with my baby and stuff like that. I'm not trying to sugarcoat anything. But again, that's just me. Like I don't want to have a job for 20 years that I have to pretend to be someone else. That's a recipe for unhappiness.
Yeah, I don't regret in the Queensland summer wearing a tie. It's horrible. It doesn't make any sense to me, but obviously I don't have that affiliation with things. But that also goes to why I love investing and buying assets, not liabilities, because it takes you away. Like, what's the ultimate goal in life? Is it to have all these things around you, which you know, let's face it, you die, you don't end up with them anyway, or, you know, to have a bit of a legacy. And that's where that investing mindset came in, whereas like you can set up not only yourself, but, you know, your future families through legacy assets, and commercial property and residential property is the way that I've had the most success. And it makes sense to me because I sucked at, you know, currency trading, but yeah, here we are.
I actually had, so when like I started my business and I was in the UK, so I actually thought I was nowhere near going to be able to like get lots of clients and grow, because as soon as I'm like, oh, I'm overseas, I thought 90% of people are just going to be like, I'm not dealing with someone overseas. But weirdly, it actually helped with sales, because people are like, yep, I want exactly that, Steve. Get me a passive income where you don't have to work like that. And I actually had the opposite problem. I actually grew too fast because I was overseas. So it just kind of depends. Like, I find it baffling. People go to a buyer's agent and they're constantly doing the social media of live life on your terms, build a passive income, enjoy life. And they're still working 12 hours a day in an office wearing a suit. I'm just like, is that your goal? Or is the goal like a 50-foot yacht or a 100-foot yacht? Which again is fine. Like, if that is your goal, and I know wealthy people where figuratively and metaphorically, it's their cocaine. Like, them making money brings them so much joy. Mm. I actually get less joy the more money I make. So what I mean by that is, when I did my first client, I was over the moon. I'm like, how good is this? I got paid. I helped out a client. Then all of a sudden it's like, oh, let's try to make 100 grand in the business. You make that and it's really exciting. Then the next step is, should we go 200 grand? And then the next step, it starts going exponential. It's like, next is 500, then it's a mil, then it's a 2 mil. And every time you reach one of those targets, you're just like, why am I not getting happier? It's actually getting sad. And I actually had the same thing in my personal portfolio. I remember it was around property number 6 or 7. I bought it, and after signing the contract, I was like, oh, this is going to be an absolute pain in the bum, another property to manage. Whereas shouldn't you be happier when you're buying a property? And I was kind of getting a negative connotation. And that's also what changed my strategy. I was like, okay, I don't want to have 50 properties. Let's get some good quality ones, pay down strategy, and start actually enjoying life.
Yeah, that's a normal process to go through in business and life, is you grow to a certain range and then everything breaks, and then you have to readjust to recalibrate, you know, your SOP and your strategy in business, investing and all that sort of stuff. And I think that's really relevant, and I'm glad that you mentioned that, Steve, also about, you know, somebody saying, hey, you know, I want what you have, you know, you're overseas, you're earning money through a passive income and doing a bit of work as well on the side, like, I want that. When you're looking for a mentor, typically that is the person you want to find, somebody that's achieved exactly what you want to achieve. And then that goes with a buyer's agent. You want to find the person that has bought those properties and achieved those results in those properties for other people, maybe for themselves, but certainly for other people, so you know that they can do it for you as well. And they're the sort of questions I guess you should be tailoring towards your buyer's agent. I'm like, this is my goal. I think this is the right strategy. Maybe you can help me like make sure it is the right strategy. And then, you know, have you done this for other people before, and what are the results?
Yeah. Well, a couple of my pet peeves with buyer's agents are, the first one is when they say, oh, we're doing this to give back. And I'm like, well, you wouldn't be charging 15 grand a pop or 7 grand for your course if you're doing it to give back. So why are you lying? Like, and I'm really honest. When people ask me, they're like, oh, Steve, if you don't have to work, why are you still doing this? And I'm like, it means I get to fly business class and first class everywhere I go. It's cream on top. And I enjoy property. Like, I enjoy working 4 or 5 hours a day. I will never work 12 hours a day. So it's cream on top to what I already enjoy. So why would I not do it? And that's brilliant. Honest. Like, there's a money incentive, and that's part of business. I'm going to give you a good service, hopefully do a good job. You're going to pay me money and then get you on number two, number three, number four. So that's the first pet peeve. The other one is when you follow a buyer's agent with a large portfolio, be aware that you can earn really, really good money as a buyer's agency. There's lots of buyer's agents that earn 1 mil, 2 mil, 3 mil, 4 mil, 10 mil a year from their buyer's agency. So then when they promise the dream of you can too can have a 10 mil portfolio, no, you can't. Like, if you're doing a day-to-day job earning 100K a year, you can never have a 10 mil portfolio. Like, banks will not allow it. You do the calculation and you look at capital growth. Even if you're getting 20% capital growth, serviceability will actually stop you. So unless you do an active strategy of developments or get into commercial or something like that, you will not get there. And that's probably my biggest pet peeve, is where you think, I'm going to be like that buyer's agent, have just the same life, the same passive income, the same portfolio size. No, their circumstances are different. They're making multi-million dollars a year. Having a 20 mil portfolio and earning $3 million a year, it's actually not that difficult. Within 5 to 10 years, you can actually pay it off.
Mm. Yeah. Yeah.
Rant over.
Nah, keep going. No, mate. I love it.
Understanding where you're at and the gap between where you're at and where somebody else is at, that's one thing. But like you said, you know, the same path? Can you achieve the same path with the same level of resources?
And I'm not trying to diss people having really wealthy life. And you're probably a perfect person to say this to, Jared. If you want to be really wealthy, you're not going to just do it with one investing strategy. You need something else, like business. So I always encourage people, I always just say, don't do nothing. Like, go invest in shares or property or start a business. Do something, because inflation will kill you either way. Property can give you a very comfortable life. That's what the main point I want to take away from this.
Yeah. Mm. Property is easy. Like when you have the right team, property is a breeze. It's so easy compared to other investment strategies. And Sam and I have done so many, haven't we, Sam, over 8 years?
Yeah. I think property is passive once you've got it. So like people arguing, oh, no, I've got to worry about maintenance of air conditioners and hot water systems, stuff like that. But assuming you've done your research, it's not passive at the start. And like when people say, oh, Steve, you've got a great passive income, it didn't feel passive. I worked 10 years at it, staying up till 2 a.m. every single night. I've read every single book, listened to every single podcast. There was nothing passive about it. But once you actually buy that property and you don't have to sell it, it's passive. Like, you let it go, property managers sort it out, and hopefully every 7 to 12 years it'll double in price and you kind of build wealth that way.
Mm. And if you've got to spend a few thousand bucks then on a new hot water system, it's tax deductible, and you need a new hot water system every 10 years anyway, 10 to 15.
Mm. Yeah.
Yeah. It's interesting, isn't it, though? Like the lifestyle and just trying to find those people that you vibe with. I'd say, I mean, everyone's different. They're just like, you know, case by case, Steve.
Yeah, but case by case. But like going back to your question, Jared, about like what questions to actually ask, that's probably the hardest one. So once you've got your kind of like why you're buying property set in your head, then you can go find kind of buyer's agents that kind of suit that goal a little bit. Don't let them tell you the strategy. Like, they can tell you the property strategy, but not the kind of goal of why you want to get there. And then once you've found them, find out what their niche is. So like, you can't do absolutely everything. And I know I'm saying this fully well as someone who does commercial and residential. But if I decide, look, I'm going to buy in Rockhampton, probably don't come to me. I'm not buying lots of residential dwellings in Rockhampton. I don't know the market well. I know how to do it. I can probably do a decent job. But there's probably someone better than me for that type of market. So find what niche they're kind of doing or what their service, and then why they're actually doing that. It's like, what's the data? It's always going to come down to data and research. Like, that's where you should be buying. But like I said at the start, you can misconstrue that information. So to normally match that up is you get the experience. So you say, okay, what data do you provide? And 5 years ago when you're buying properties, can you show me that data translated to the capital growth? And then you can at least assume that you're going to get a similar result, even though it's not guaranteed.
Yeah, it's a really good one. I think about it in that terms as well. Like you said, 5 years ago when you bought this property, what are the results now? Back to what we mentioned, or I mentioned before, is that, you know, somebody could, the buyer's agent could buy your property, and in a year's time, like, cool, deal done, they never need to speak to you again. And you're like, well, this hasn't grown. In fact, it hasn't done very good at all. That's scary. That's really scary.
I hear that on that bit. I'm going to say, well, no one's got a crystal ball as well. And like from 2013 till now, we've been in a growth period, you know. Yeah. Like, so you could throw a rock at any house and buy that, and it would have been increased in value from probably 2013 to now. I see more growth coming into the market. But what I love about Steve, and also sort of my mindset being that risk averse valuer, is like, how do you reduce risk every step of the way? Because there's a misconception where, you know, a lot of the data points to, you know, short-term growth prospects in these, you know, hot spots, so to speak. And it's like, well, then you go and tell me investing is all a long-term game, 10 plus years. So it's like, well, you know, there's a bit of a disconnect there. On that front, yes, the short-term growth is that opportunity cost where you can get that kicker straight away, and that helps. But I mean, like, lean back on the fundamentals and then try to reduce risk as much as possible. And asking them, what are the biggest risks, and, you know, how are you ensuring that we're mitigating that?
Yeah, well, one of my general rules, Sam, if anyone guarantees they can get you growth in the next 12 to 24 months, just run a mile. Like, I've done like 1,500 clients and talked to even more investors than that. I'm yet to meet anyone who's been able to pick it to 12 or 24 months. Even I actually spoke to Terry Ryder, who owns the website Hotspotting, yesterday, and even he says he gets it wrong sometimes. One of the interesting things he says is he actually doesn't focus on previous growth. He's like, that has no effect on me whatsoever. I focus on what's coming up. So he makes all these hotspotting decisions based on what infrastructure is coming in and what's coming up. And that's probably the right way to do it, because what's already there has already happened. You can't actually change that. It maybe give you an indicator for where you are in a growth curve. If it's had done nothing for 10 years and had 20%, you might say, oh, if it follows the typical double every 10, 12 years, there might be some room to grow. But unless the infrastructure and the fundamentals are going in, and that's probably my mindset as well. Like, I tell my clients, I buy very boring properties, like tick the box, like short days on market, tight vacancy rates, good population growth, good infrastructure spending, just good land component, like 3-4 bedroom brick houses that I know are going to perform long term. Can I say they're going to grow well in the next 2 or 3 years? No. Hopefully they do, but I've got it wrong sometimes. And by wrong, I'd mean I just haven't picked it to 12 or 24 months. So like, I bought around 50 properties in Launceston about 5 years ago, and every client thought I was a genius because they went up from like 300 grand to about 400 grand in a year. I was also buying Brisbane at the time for 300 grand, and they actually sat there for about 2 or 3 years doing nothing. And then the last 2 years, now those properties are 550, 600. So you can hopefully get some runs on the board over 5 to 10 years, but just run a mile if anyone says they can pick it to 12 months. There's too many external factors. There's human emotion, then there's interest rates, then there's supply chain issue, then there's wars, then there's pandemics, then there's government changes, and there's land tax changes. Like, that is all out of your control. So you can only try to get it to the best, I'd say, 5 years if you're really good at what you're doing.
One of my mentors is, one of his clients is a global fund manager.
Steve Polisi.
Yeah, you can be in there too, mate. I've got to pay you some money. That's the thing. Anyway, let me have a spiel. Come on. I've got mentors too, you too. But his client is a global fund manager in Zurich. And even he was saying, look, outside of 6 months, no one can really predict what is exactly going to happen. And that's what I kind of lean on to say, look, you'll reduce your risk every step of the way. You've got this long-term mindset. The growth of the Australian property market and the history, you know, lends itself to saying this is going to increase in value. When it does, obviously, you know, whether it's 12 months, 5 years, you're investing for that long-term. And then, I mean, even Jeremy Shepherd, he talks about over the 30-year period, most properties even out from that growth. Because I get some clients like, oh, we want the 10-year growth rate's been, you know, really strong. We want to buy in here. And it's like, well, you know, you're basing your decision off one assumption. And that goes back to the question of this whole pod is like, having these questions to talk to these buyer's agents about gives you more ammunition. And then therefore that builds more trust, in my opinion, anyway.
Yeah. But like I said, it's no one knows. And I even like economists get it wrong most of the time. My partner works in reinsurance, which is like insurance that insures insurance companies. So they're the ones that are forking out like 200, 400, 500 mil. 70% of those companies haven't made money in 5 years. So they're supposed to be the ones with the money and the control, and they're getting it wrong. So if they're getting it wrong, economists getting it wrong, why is average Joe, the buyer's agent, going to get it right for you? And that's why I said, I always just bring it back to simple. Just get the fundamentals right. So at least in 10 years' time, you'll hopefully be in a better position than you are now.
Mate, those insurance companies own the world. They're just offshoring those. They're just running down they're saying they're not profitable because they don't want to pay the income tax, and then they can shift it around the world. It's intelligent how the world works.
Well, why do you think I'm living in the UK most of the time?
You know what I also think is important is not just like how to choose the right buyer's agent for maybe your first property, but also when you get to the point when you decide to not use that buyer's agent anymore based on the experience they have and you changing your, you know, your strategy and your portfolio to grow a different way as well. I think that's a question that people should be asking too. You know, I've thought about it with people that are just residential buyer's agents, and they're just so good at what they do. And for me, I wanted to go and take a different strategy, and I need to rethink and re-strategize to this next strategy, who do I need, and who's the person that I can go to that can achieve those goals for me? So I think that's a good question, is like re-strategize where you're at each purchase in your property portfolio, and then who is the right buyer's agent at that time, and not get too associated with like just this one, same one the whole way. That's something that I think about.
And like you said, your strategy changes over time, especially because people's income changes over time. Like I've been told my accountant, stop buying cheap properties, even though I love them because I'm like, oh, it's great for diversification. I get a better yield. I'm kind of risk mitigating that way. He's like, no, no, you're not in that world anymore. Like, buy like the bigger ones. So I might have started off, and I did. I bought a property previously for a buyer's agent that was buying the little cheap 100 to 200 grand properties. But as soon as you start looking in the 500 grand, they weren't buying that. So that's not the right buyer's agent for me at that time. And then if I start buying $2 or $3 million properties, definitely don't use that guy who's buying 200 grand properties because he doesn't have any experience there. So like you said, move as you kind of progress as well.
Yeah. Yeah. Love it. Anything else for you guys to add before we wrap this up?
I would say be wary of buyer's agents that try to sell secrets. So we're not going to tell you what we're buying, where we're buying, pay us $7,000 engagement fee, then we'll give you all the keys to the secret, like the secrets to the success. Like, you should be going with the transparent one, the one that kind of tells you this is what we're buying, where we're buying, how we do it, why are you going to pay us money? But anytime there's a secret involved or even lack of information, I actually know of some buyer's agent that won't tell you why they're buying there because they're like, oh, this is IP. Like, just run a mile. Like, that's, for me, is ridiculous. If you're paying that much money, they can tell you why they're buying there.
Hmm. A risk mitigation strategy on that one is understand their refund policy.
it's one of those ones. But even one of the points I want to probably touch on we haven't spoken about is reviews. So a lot of people go, oh, I'll check their Google reviews. And I'm saying this, I've got a lot of Google reviews. I've got like 170 Google reviews and I think about another 200 on other platforms. That doesn't mean I'm a good buyer's agent because the people write the review once you've bought them the property. So they don't actually know if it's a good or bad property. Like, it's all exciting. Like, you settle, you send them a gift, get them to write a review for you. That doesn't show that they're a good buyer's agent. So let's get that off. The same as, and a lot of people say, oh, why don't you talk to one of their previous clients? Again, that doesn't tell you. If you call one of their clients and they're like, yeah, I bought a year ago, it's going up $20,000. That doesn't really help your decision. I'd say where it does help is ask about how the levels of service they gave you through the experience. Like, were they always available? Could you push back? Could you ask questions? Did they handhold? Did they not force a sale on you as well? Like, was it not pressure cooker? That's what a lot of the big ones kind of do. They kind of go, you must take this, otherwise we're going to send it to someone else and we're not going to send you anything else. I wouldn't go with a buyer's agent that forces you to buy a property against your will ever.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, that's a really good point because even as you evolve, the business, like, it becomes unprofitable from their end. But it's, what are you, going back to the whole reason, why did you start this? Are you trying to help people or are you trying to help yourself? So.
Yeah, and there's always, like you said, Jared, before, there's going to be analysis paralysis. Like, I'm good at sales because I've done this long. I know kind of how most people play out. Some people just trust you wholeheartedly, send them the first property, they say, yep, absolutely love it. Some people, you send it to them and they like the property, but they say no to it because they don't want to buy the first property that you sent them. They're like, oh, I wonder what, if this is this good, what's the next one going to be like? So to get around that scenario, I just actually say, hey, look, this is a good property. Here's the last three properties we bought in this price range for other clients. And then they can actually see, at least that way they're making an informed decision. Then you get the other ones where you have to send 3, 4, 5 properties to, and it's no longer comes down to the actual property. You can tell they've got analysis paralysis. So then as a buyer's agent, I actually call them up and have the hard word of like, hey, look, you engaged me because I'm good at what I do. You didn't do it because like you the time poor, whatever it may be, you need to commit. If not, like, there's no point me sending you 10 or 20 properties that you don't like. I don't have the time for that. You shouldn't want to see that anyway. What's holding you back? And then just have a brutal, honest conversation with them, which is the kick up the bum conversation we mentioned before at the start of the podcast.
Absolutely.
Yes, mate. I can't believe how fast the time's gone. This has been a really good
podcast. Okay, it's done. I thought we were going to talk for like 20 minutes on this one. I'm like, oh, yeah, this will be a fun little one.
We'll invite you in for another 9-part series.
9-part series on choosing a buyer's agent.
Yeah. No, anything else to add, lads? Because I think we've covered some really good points.
Yeah. I'd just say closing statement is just get educated. So like it's harder to have the wool pulled over your eyes if you're educated. So I've obviously got books, read all the competitors' books, read people's books who don't have a buyer's agency as well. Because they're non-incentive. Download, even pay for some reports. Like, there's websites that give property data reports and things like that. Fork out the few $100 or $1,000 to read some of those. So you can actually see, like, okay, this is a paid report. What are they giving me that I didn't know already? And that'll give you further knowledge as well. Probably don't go to those seminars. I'm not a huge fan of seminars where people go pay $10,000 to spend 3-4 days in a room and get upsold at the end of it.
I totally agree. Do not go to paid seminars. Do not go to free seminars and get upsold something from stage. I've got friends that do have those business models and they do really well, but there's a lot of hypiness and fear around it. And you should never be making investment decisions or life decisions based on fear. If it feels expansive to you, lean in. If it's like, oh no, I need to do something about it, and you're making a decision based out of fear, typically it's not the best decision for you. It's what I've found in my life. So that's a little philosophy that I like to follow. And you're right, Steve and Sam, education. That's why Sam and I do this, is like, let's have a chat. Let's have a good, transparent, honest conversation around property investing and, you know, learn from other people's mistakes, such as all of ours.
I've got a bit of a funny story. So I've been to a lot of those free seminars. I actually have never done a paid one. I've been to heaps of the free ones. One of them I went to, and the guy up on stage started crying. So he's just crying. He's just like, sorry, I'm just so emotional that I'm like, you guys are going to be incredibly wealthy. And I started giggling. I'm like, this is ridiculous. And I looked around the room and people had tears in their eyes. I'm just like, what is going on? And again, people are emotional creatures. I'm not dissing them, people, for getting emotionally involved in it, because it is important to them. Some people, financial security is way more important for them, especially if they've got a family or whatever it may be. And I was just baffled. And they're the type of people that might get misconstrued and go sign on the dotted line as they're leaving the door for the 50% discount and things like that. But there are so many podcasts like this one and books in stores. There's nothing stopping you from getting free education now. So like we said, get educated, and at least that way there's less chance you have the wool pulled over your eyes.
There's a little lead into Steve's got his book. It's $40, but because use the code Property Pals and you get it for free. But it's both residential, commercial, really, really insightful. And we're all about transparency here, because I'm just sick of the BS in the industry, and hence why we wanted to have this conversation today. Another little tip I'd say is, for me personally, Jared, Steve, I don't make big financial decisions, like even using a buyer's agent or anything that's a few thousand dollars, without sleeping on the thought. So if you're in that pressure cooker, get to the back of the room, sign up now, you know, otherwise you'll miss out. That's that fear Jared's talking about, fear missing out. You know, just sit back, take 4 deep breaths and have a think about, you know, mate, is this deal going to be here tomorrow? And most of the time it's always going to be there tomorrow. So just be smart.
I'm going to steal that. That's actually a really good one. However, on the flip side, don't leave it too long. I'd probably say have a few nights sleep. I find if you leave, and I've learned this in sales as well, like if you leave them for a week or two, someone will get in their ear and convince them otherwise, because investing is risky. Like if it was guaranteed, everyone would be wealthy. So there's always going to be some form of negative, and then that can percolate as well. So I'd say you still have to take action. So get educated, but at some point, the only way you're going to get wealthier is by actually taking initiative and action.
I agree.
Awesome. Steve, the end. Sam, thanks so much. We appreciate the time, lads.
What an emotional roller coaster these podcasts have been.
Oh, you love them, mate. You love
them. No, in all seriousness, thank you so much for your time, guys. I genuinely appreciate it.
Thank you, Steve.
Likewise. Guys, check out all the previous pods if you haven't. It's been a 9-part series. There's so much in there. Recommend going through the whole thing. Also getting Steve's book, get educated, and we'll speak to you on the next one. Thanks, guys.
Sounds good. Thanks, guys.